For the Ides of March 2019, we talk about the end of the PS Vita, Immortal Unchained, and we ask you what obscure game you wish people would stream. Welcome to Level 277. My name is Cole Ross.
My name is David Mysmith.
And I'm Jala Prendes.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Thank you for understanding us being off last week. It just made sense for us to be off. But it is good to be back and good to be with y'all. Hey, Jala. Hey, David.
Hi.
Hey. Yeah.
There's an important thing I have to announce.
Okay.
Okay, so in the Tyrannosaurus Tex episode of Abject Suffering,
okay,
you guys were talking about birds and how birds just kind of like poop in places. Well, you know, Fiara, my cockatiel before Rami, who is my current cockatiel that's a baby, Fiara was potty trained. And she would only go to the bathroom over a, like, trash can. And so, like, I taught her that because I used to take her into my office with me when I was working, and she would just be hanging out on my shoulder or something, or on the desk. And then I would just, you know, take her and put her over the trash can whenever she needed to go to the bathroom. So she did like a little dance right before, you know, she had to go. And then that's like, okay, quick, put her over the trash can, and okay, then she would go to the bathroom. So, and then also she, like, I put a piece of like a napkin or something down on my desk, and she would go over there to go to the bathroom, kind of like a cat's litter box. So,
oh, that's real cool.
Yeah, so like she was potty trained, so it's entirely possible to potty train a bird. It's just it takes time and patience, and not all birds pick it up the same way. Like Rami has not yet discovered how to do this. I do not know how old Fiara was when I got her, because she just kind of like literally flew to my dad one day.
Right.
And I had her for 3 years. I do not know how old she was, but Rami is like one.
Right.
So, you know, he's still a baby. So yeah, he has not figured it out yet, but I hope to potty train him at some juncture.
So this very rarely happens where I'm directly confronted with something that I've said on another show.
I know.
We remark on this a lot during specifically Abject Suffering. I have no recollection of what we talk about during those episodes.
No, I know. Like, it's fine. It's kind of like people, you know, I've experienced that myself where people will say, hey, Jala, you said that thing in The Level. And I'm like, what? what did I say in The Level? When did I say that? I don't remember talking about that, you know, and I only do one show. I can only imagine what it's like for your head, you know?
So I assumed during that, like we were talking about having pet dinosaurs, and I talked about how birds are basically dinosaurs, and they like birds poop everywhere, so dinosaurs would poop everywhere too.
I you know, I don't even remember what the context was for that.
Okay. Okay.
You were just talking about like different animals, going into detail because it's Abject Suffering.
Right.
You talk about, you know, there's certain topics that are always brought up, and that's one of them.
Evergreen, yeah.
you know, so
people need to know, Jala.
Yeah, so that was the thing. Well, that's why I had to like do this little expose and say, oh no, you can potty train a bird.
Well, so that is both adorable and gross. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. No. But you can do that, and you can also put a birdie diaper on them, and then they can have a diaper, and then they will not poop everywhere. And they'll have a little jumpsuit.
they don't chafe at that.
No, because it has like, it's like, depending upon the bird, you have to like get them used to having it on in the first place,
yeah,
you know, but like once they get accustomed to it, then once they relate it to this is how you get out of your cage, then they're cool.
Oh, okay. But, yeah.
You know, but like if they don't link that up, then, you know, and also like the good thing about the little birdie diaper jumpsuit thing is that like you can put a leash on it and have them on a harness, so that way you can take them out without like having to be scared about, you know, oh, is my bird gonna fly off of my shoulder and get lost somewhere, you know, because like there are people who have their birds free flying, free, you know, free trained and everything, mm-hmm, budgies and cockatiels and stuff that'll just sit on their shoulder able to fly and not flying off, but you know, like especially if there's, you know, a bunch of unexpected noises and stuff in any area that you're in, you know, which is basically somebody honks a horn, then the bird's going to freak out.
Right.
And,
They'll go to what seems safe, even if it does put them in horrible, horrible danger. Yeah.
Yeah.
And unlike cats, they will not respond by, you know, plotting your demise.
I don't know. Birds can be very vindictive, and they will remember shit forever. So, like, you got to watch out about that.
Yeah. Crows, man. Crows. They'll do it. They communicate with each other. They'll share your face.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No. Okay. So that is good to know. I am happy to add that to my portfolio of information about birds. It's strange. After getting a pet, I've gotten just kind of more comfortable dealing with something else's feces. You know,
it happens. Like, I mean, you know, like when you talk about it and you are removed from dealing with it ever, it's one thing. But like when you've dealt with it for a while, then it's not such a big deal anymore. It's kind of like, you know, people who are not parents who have to try to change a kid's diaper, if they're not accustomed to that kind of a thing, they can like puke, you know. But like the parents just like, dude, I have stories for you about what's happened with this kid and what they have done.
Yeah, you know? I've sent photos to scientists. Yeah. I recently switched Greta to I cut a hole in a lid of like a Rubbermaid tote to act as her litter box, because she kept on kicking the litter out of the box and, you know, carrying it out with her whenever she'd go. So now she has to jump out the hole in the lid, then it's fine. But because I was worried that people wouldn't know what that box was if they came and found it, I got some adhesive mailbox letters, and I labeled the top of that Rubbermaid tote "cat poop and pee." I'll post a picture of it, but just in case you were curious what's in the box, it's cat poop and pee.
Wait, yeah. Why? What were you concerned that people would do with the box?
I don't know. Just okay. You know.
So
go ahead.
My big question is, how did you conceive of the notion that people wouldn't smell that crap from, like, I mean, like, I understand after you've gotten accustomed to a smell, but like if somebody is just walking into your house, they're going to smell that litter from the next room over, let alone all the stuff in the litter.
Well, the funny thing about the story is that it's just a joke. I just wanted to label a box cat poop and pee, and the mailbox letters were just the way to do it.
Yeah.
It's also a gray Rubbermaid tote, so it looks like a weird generic product. Like, if this is how you wanted to buy the cat poop and pee. Yeah. That's the real answer.
Yes. Well, you know, I have to heckle you. It's like in my contract.
How are you doing, David?
Yeah, pretty good. I just got back from Huntsville, Alabama.
Oh, that's where you used to live there for a while, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So went down to visit friends. We did a seminar. It was applications to Wing Chun of the techie kata from karate.
Okay.
So that was kind of cool. And then also was the saw Captain Marvel, which was pretty awesome.
Cool.
So then we also had the Huntsville Comic Expo, which was a lot of fun. There's some amazing Bloodborne cosplay that I actually posted a picture of to the Slack. Some people went pretty above and beyond. and then also there was a pair of male and female BB-8s rolling around, which was pretty interesting.
How do you add gender signifiers to BB-8?
I feel
the
like
color.
Yeah, I feel like the one that was pink and had rhinestones was presumably meant to be female. Although, you know, I wouldn't be one to judge a droid's fashion sense one way or the other.
Right. Right.
But it was actually kind of cool because one of the people that was with us actually was runs for Dragon Con a lot of the puppetry track.
Okay.
And so it was interesting, you know, she is describing apparently they're actually quite difficult to control. because you basically, you know, the head is effectively independent from the rest of the body. So, like, if you want to, for example, turn, you know, to have it look at someone, you have to move the body and the head separately, in effect. And it was a lot of fun seeing, like, small children that were completely unaware that, you know, the robot's being controlled by, like, the guy 10 feet away with a remote control.
Okay.
So, you know, and it, you know, chittering at them and them, you know, having conversations with it and stuff like that was pretty amazing.
Nice.
And then kind of the highlight was there was a concert by a group called Cybertronic Spree, who basically play all like 80s era like pop music, and in particular theme songs to popular cartoons.
Okay.
However, they do so while dressed completely in Transformers costumes.
Okay. Are there like 50 of them on the stage, like the Polyphonic Spree?
Maybe.
I mean, it's a simple question. Are there a bunch of, or there a bunch
no,
of them on?
No, okay. about four people.
Okay.
But yeah, it's definitely a entertaining, if perhaps niche, experience.
Well, you know, I mean, there's a there is a consistent market. Like, there are a bunch of those kind of conventions you could just kind of go to if you wanted, as an act like that.
Yep, I think my favorite, just in terms of weirdness, is the band was actually you know, from Canada, and apparently as part of their like visa, and you know, presumably also because they wanted to, they were obligated to place at least one song from a Canadian cartoon in order to qualify as being like cultural ambassadors for their visa or whatever.
Okay, what counted as their Canadian cartoon?
I do not even know. Like, it was something that, like, I had no idea what was going on. I'm not even, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, I'm not even sure what to search for.
Yeah. I don't even know how to begin asking this question.
I assume that it involved, like, probably mooses and mounties and craft meal, but that may just be whatever the, like, country equivalent of racism is, like
just stereotyping them. A cartoon about a moose named Timmy's. Neat. Well, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, it was.
Well, I don't really have any stories beyond the box labeled cat poop and pee. Do we have anything else we wanted to hit, or do we want to do a show?
We can go ahead and do a show. There's things I could say, but it's showtime.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, while we're here.
While we're here, we might as well have the regular kind of show, you know, with the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind, and the fates have decreed that we start with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Jalo, what's the story you brought?
I got a couple of them, but I'll start with one and go to the other. So... The folks across the pond in the UK have set up a new initiative to tackle the problem of poor diversity in the UK game dev sector. POC in Play is a racial equality and inclusion movement with the goal of representation, providing events and initiatives for people of color currently working in the industry or thinking of joining. And the problem of representation, they mentioned in the article, is a self-perpetuating thing, right? You know, children of color don't see different ethnic groups working in the industry, and then they don't think of it as being a viable career option for themselves because there's nobody else like them.
Yeah, it's not for me.
Yeah. So the games made also lack diversity because the staff working to make them is homogenous.
Right.
So, You know, one of the quotes from the article is, there's a problem of visibility, both of people working in the industry and the games themselves. The representation is often stereotypical. A black man will often be, say, an LA gang member, but that's not representing the experience of people in Leeds or Birmingham or in the Caribbean. South Asian people are rarely represented at all. There's a lack of seeing your own stories being portrayed, so young people of color aren't being encouraged to think, I could make a game like that. So this endeavor is being supported by Us2 Games, the dev behind Monument Valley. Mm. So the first meeting is going to be on March 22nd, so this is a brand new initiative, but I'm pretty excited to hear about it. Just because diversity is a thing that needs to be out there in the world.
Yeah.
So that was my first little tidbit.
So is this like a national, committee or?
Yeah, it's just like a UK wide, but like, you know, they, wherever they have people is where they're setting up, their get togethers and things to facilitate this. So the second thing is the University of Texas is launching a new gaming curriculum, which builds on existing curricula, adding in coursework and coding for games and in visualization. Both the departments of Arts and Entertainment Technologies and Computer Science will be offering minor degree programs with a curriculum that blends computer science and design. And they aim to double the number of faculty in game design by 2020. So, like, you know, although they're starting at whatever the base level is, they want to, you know, expand this program rather aggressively. The curriculum is designed with a strong focus on industry partnerships and opportunities for students to interact with gaming studios and gaming professionals, which is pretty easy over in Austin since that's like a growing base for development and tech in general. Industry partners consistently told UT that they wanted graduates who are technically fluent, creative problem solvers, skilled at working collaboratively, you know, all that kind of mess. So they're basically working to make a responsive program that gives students the skills and experience they need to launch their careers right there. And Texas, by the way, is home to about 20,000 games related jobs with a 10% growth expected over the next 8 years. So it is a thing.
Yeah.
But that's just like, hey, there's, you know, some more opportunities and some more growth happening not that far from where I live. So the one thing very far away from me and the one thing kind of close. Yeah. So this
is good that it's a big, that's a big school, right? Big state school. You know, I mean, when I was looking at colleges, most of these were most programs that talked about this kind of stuff seemed real fly by night or extremely boutique and expensive. But the idea that this is at a state school, I mean, you answered my question of like, are they doing industry outreach? Because, you know, that is a big question. Like, are they preparing people for the reality of working in the project to project kind of environment of game dev? Yeah.
Teaching them to, you know, cook ramen and such.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry. I'm sorry, I kind of cut off. I super apologize for laughing in the middle of the previous story. I just had the image of, like, an LA gangster in, like, Cardiff or whatever, and just being incredibly confused about their life. So Not laughing at the concept of diversity, more just the concept of like that incredibly confused person.
Yes, real fish out of water kind of thing. Yeah, no, I mean this is good. You know, Texas, you know, obviously has a bunch of studios. Yeah, all of it seems on the level.
Yup. It is on the level.
Oh, geez, I didn't even say that. I didn't mean that, and I hate it when I don't mean it because it sounds like I'm trying too hard to do something funny, but it was totally an accident. Oh,
get grumpy, Cole. Get grumpy.
Nah, I'm fine.
Aw,
nah.
Dang it.
Yep. No, I don't know that I have a lot to add on it.
No, I just wanted to let people know those are things that are happening out in the world to spread diversity and to increase, you know, the potential for people out in the world who want to make games.
Yeah.
So I think that's really cool. Those are typical Jala stories, aren't they?
Yeah. So I've got my story. It's not really, I mean, it's kind of a typical Cole story, but it also might be a new segment, jingle pending and such. But the tentative name for this segment is Who Is This For?
That is a Cole thing for sure.
Who is this for? So here's what I'm asking. Here's what I'm asking. Who is this for? So weirdly enough, Sony and the PlayStation platform have been kind of integrated with mobile devices, specifically iOS devices, for a while. Like for a long time, you've had an app where you could go and like check your like messages, right? On PSN, you could see who was online. Functionality was rudimentary, but it was there. There was also some, you know, strange second screen stuff that people were doing, which is fine. However, something strange has been added: an app, along with an update to the PlayStation 4 firmware, has added remote play to the iOS devices. Now, you may be wondering, okay, so like I can turn that on and then like it's a I can see what somebody is doing with a controller. No, what it's doing is displaying the video that your PS4 is outputting on your phone. Good, thumbs up. And you're controlling your PlayStation 4 with virtual D-pad controls on your touchscreen device. So you know when a video game is ported to iOS and you think, well, that's a fun game, but I sure as shit don't want to play that with a virtual D-pad and virtual buttons and such. Here, you can do that with anything. So if you want to play Horizon Zero Dawn, oh wait, not play, I mean look at and unplayably paw your way through it, then you can do that on iOS now, in addition to Android and Mac and PC and such like that. I don't understand. I am baffled. And I don't know what I'm going to do. So I'm going to put that to you guys. Who is that for?
So what about like something like XCOM, something turn-based?
Maybe. But still, that'd be really frustrating. That's a real high bar to get over, isn't it? You know, even that still requires, you know, some fine manipulation. Jala, do you have a guess who that's for? I don't have an answer. All I know is who it's not for, which is anybody.
Well, it just reminded me when I saw that you posted the story. Didn't I say something like Amazon was working on some kind of crap with like remote play on their devices or something?
Like Amazon.
There was some kind of a story about some other company that was working on that was not Sony, and I mentioned it during a brief a while back, and I don't remember anything about it. But
yeah,
like,
this was brought up during a brief a few episodes back, I think, maybe by you, but again, I can't remember anything I've ever said. go ahead.
Well, here's the thing. Can't you just, because you can on an iDevice use a gamepad. You can get a gamepad for your iDevice and use it that way. So couldn't you just do that and then use it on your iDevice to play your PS4 game?
Maybe.
As long as that works, that would be fine. And then you could play it remotely without having to be actually at your PS4, which would be cool.
So definitely, DualShocks are Bluetooth, and iOS devices and most portable devices. Ah, here we go. They see fit to put this in the app description. You cannot use the DualShock 4 with this app. So you just suggested a perfectly reasonable thing, that you could use a PlayStation 4 controller with your PlayStation 4 game on your iPhone. No, they've gotten out in front of that. You cannot do
strangely
it.
Strangely enough, right, I wonder, after that says, nice try, sucker.
Well, don't they have like other branded controllers that you can get? Like you can just buy one for your phone. that you can use too. I wonder if those would work or if it's just like literally no controller will work. Because if something works on it, even if it's inconvenient and you can't use your PS4 controller, which that's dumb, but like if that were the case, you could still use something and it would be okay.
Maybe. So
more research is needed.
Yeah. I've got a listener a while back sent me a Bluetooth controller that can be used. They sent it to me to use with the Apple TV to play games there. I could definitely pair it with my iPhone and give this a shot. That's a lot of effort. So no, this secretly is not for me. Because I have a PlayStation Vita, which is an endangered species because they stopped production on that, which I've just realized was an actual story that happened while we were away last week. Godspeed, PS Vita.
I still have mine, but I also have my Switch.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
MIDS, 3DS. So.
Yep.
You know.
No, it's just weird that the PS Vita is not a thing anymore. It feels like it was brand new, but now it was released like 6 years ago and we are just... Nope. What was it, 8 years ago? It's like 2011 they released it. We will all soon be dust.
Cold, how are you older than me? Because, like, you sound like such an old man. Like, seriously.
No, I mean, that's kind of a bit. So. Oh, man. Yeah, I forget when the Vita came out. I know the 3DS was 2011, so that would have been possibly 2012, maybe. I don't know, but yeah, I don't know who the remote play is for. Every image that I've seen of the thing in action has looked unplayable. So that is to let everybody know, if this sounds good to you, which it doesn't, you can do it, but you shouldn't.
Oh. Yeah, I think you summed it up when you said like more research needed. I just think it's maybe, you know, Sony that could have used that advice.
Yeah.
Right.
So I got halfway through this story before I realized they had done this on Android devices before. And this story is just about the iOS side of it. Oh, well, the idea of doing it on like Mac and Windows seems fine to me because you'd be sitting there with a controller anyway. Oh, well. Yeah, so that's my story. David, you got a story?
Unfortunately, that would imply the ability to access the internet, which I currently do not have.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, that is A-okay. David's having some.
I had two.
You did have
two.
Fine. And I had two kind of as well.
So I claim that I actually had a story and Jala stole it via force.
We took it. Yeah.
Yeah. She is holding my well, I don't have a pet, so my imaginary pet hostage.
your Grimblefark? She's holding your Grimblefark hostage?
You know, she truly is a heartless cad, but
multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer where we talk about your answers to the question that we asked. I messed that up really bad, but I'm gonna swing with it. So we, you know, on normal shows you write in the questions and then the hosts answer them. Here though, we ask you a question and then you answer it, and that's what happens here on the multiplayer. Hey Jala, the question that you asked, could you restate it for the people?
Yeah. What obscure game would you like to see streamed that isn't out there much? And thank you to Michael P. for the question.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. And I'll get us started here with Devin, who says, The Messenger. And then there's an emoticon of somebody with a horrible eye condition where their eyes have become stars.
Yes.
Yeah. The Messenger, that was that's like the sweary 65 game, I think. No, the Messenger, that's like the Ninja Gaiden alike, right?
Yeah, it's like if Ninja Gaiden and Metroidvania, you know, kind of had a The Fly incident.
You're talking about like, you know, ninjas and stuff, and then like with the name of the Messenger, I just imagine like a mailman. And then like my brain goes in a real weird place.
Yeah.
To be fair, so, Ninja Mailman would probably be a pretty good game.
I know, like, I'm just imagining Paperboy, but better. It would be like the best ever.
Yep. I like that. It just nor Dark of Night, nor Dark of Night, nor Dark of Night. Jala, what does Austin say?
Austin says Cube was a fun little game, a little spin on the Portal involving cubes.
Hmm. There's a sequel to that that I just activated from a Humble deal, but I do not know what it is. It sounds like it's a little spin on a puzzle game involving cubes.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. Well, cubes are like the end thing now. So
are they?
We're cool. According to you, yes, they are. Actually, according to Gary.
All right. Oh, yes, boxes.
It's a thing that you said on another podcast that you don't remember.
God damn it. If people don't believe me when I say that, just listen to this. Listen to me not understand.
You're such an old man that I have to be your memory.
That's great. Have we considered, like, how easy it would be to use this to gaslight Cole?
I think I'm doing a pretty good job of gaslighting myself.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Ollie says, Turrican, any version. I love the Amiga games and have a soft spot for Mega Turrican on the Genesis, one of the best with the three soundtracks you will ever hear. It's a game that when you start playing it, it feels okay. Then over time, you come to realize that it's almost perfectly designed. I'd also love to see someone play Intelligent Cube, Karushi over here in Europe, and see them experience the stress of a puzzle game that good in 3D. Intelligent Cube is great.
Yeah.
I don't have an awful lot to add on top of that. I never played Turrican.
Well, there's he links a video of Mega Turrican, but I don't want to click on it and have it all up in my ear holes when we're in the middle of recording. So I'll have to check that out later.
Yeah. Let me see here. No, I turned it on and now I'm hearing a Squarespace ad and I want to die. Okay, there we go. Let's skip this ad and let's see. Oh yeah, Turrican's it's like a side scroller. Looks like a treasure game almost. Neat. Yeah. But Intelligent Cube, I never owned it, but I played it on a PlayStation Underground sampler. I think maybe that came with my system. And yeah, it's a real stressful. Now I want to play Intelligent Cube. And this is the second Cube game that we've talked about.
I told you, like cubes, they really are the end thing.
Let's see, Jala, what does Mike say?
Mike says, I don't know if this fits because A, these games aren't obscure, and B, I don't know if people are already playing them, but I'd be interested in watching somebody stream old PC games like Half-Life, System Shock 1, Fallout, etc. It would be particularly fun watching somebody who didn't grow up with them trying to figure out those games' archaic systems and design. Now, that got like a whole bunch of likes, and the best part about it is I'm reading this list like I didn't play any of those when they were actually extant. Like, that was my period of not playing games, and also I didn't get into PC games until like way, way late. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, I haven't played any of those. I don't know that I have the patience to stream them. Like, I've gotten like JRPG patience now,
yeah.
But I don't know if I have CRPG patience.
Of them, I think System Shock could be the one that would try your patience the most.
That already was like the one lowest on my list of, you know, if I had to pick which one would I play first, like that was the lowest one on the list anyway. So
yeah. Half-Life, even though it's too long and there's a lot of it that's just really just kind of chewy and doughy, it feels like a modern shooter at the very least. And Fallout, with as much as you like tactics games, that would I think scratch that itch for you once you get over the initial hump.
I actually have that in my backlog somewhere from GOG. Fallout? I just would have to get it and play it.
It's good.
So
I will make the uncontroversial statement that Fallout is indeed good. David, do you think Fallout's good?
It depends on which one we're talking about.
Yeah. I just wanted to make sure you were still there. I know you're having net problems.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see here. Roop says, Phantasmagoria 2. The game is just something else. I really love it until the ending kind of ruins it, but kind of makes sense. Still, I love all the FMV games and hope they'd make more now that video quality and storage aren't problems. sir, may I direct you toward Contradiction or the Infectious Madness of Dr. Decker? Or
yes, Infectious Madness of Dr. Decker. Yeah.
Yeah. There is a mini renaissance of these things.
All starring the same dude.
You know, another one that I should probably play on stream sometime is Roundabout. I've got that one.
Ah, dang. That has the McElroy content in it, doesn't it?
I don't know.
It does.
I don't know anything about them.
I phrased it like a question, but it was more of a statement. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. You did that because that's like the nicer way of going about the thing and being conversational and stuff. But I don't let you be nice.
Yeah. Phantasmagoria 2 is good. I mean, it's not a good game, but it's really, really interesting. It might be the first. I don't know. Whenever you raise something, there's always an earlier example, but like, it is a big studio game whose main character is bisexual. Along with that, like, the actual story itself is like this, you know, psychosexual drama where a guy is kind of drawn into this weird BDSM relationship. It's kind of neat in terms of being both a psychological horror and weirdly phasing into sci-fi later on, which is both ill-advised but also memorable. Yeah. I wish the game was better, but it's a good interactive movie.
Cool.
Yep. Jello, what does Greg say?
Greg says, not a game per se, but I'd love to see people stream obscure systems that most of us will never see. The original Odyssey, RCA Studio 2, Gizamondo, Apple Pippin, etc.
Yeah, I think the problem is getting outputs. Like, it would be relatively easy to set up a camera and, you know, set the image so that it captured the entire device. Man, fuck if I would know how to get an Odyssey into a capture card.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. That's a little bit of a problem with, like, so they did, like, this weird re-release of System Shock 1, but, like, I don't know. It'd be really hard to get that to run and also stream at the same time. Like, it's hard to stream Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines because of weird compatibility stuff.
Yeah.
So much stuff falls between the cracks. Yep. Lindsay says, this one I have streamed for a couple of weeks now, Eternal Ring. It is now 19 years old and still plays great. It is the Bloodborne of the Kingsfield games made by FromSoft and is available for download on the PS Store. Love the music and most of the story, but the gameplay is where it shines, in my opinion. A fun game that many people passed over, and it is sad that people did. Please check this game out if you love Kingsfield. And yeah, Eternal Ring is on the list of stuff to cover for Bonfire Side Chat Rekindled.
Woohoo! That means a lot of people will be playing it soon.
Yep. No, yeah. I mean, Eternal Ring, just to let, like, anything in that weird early PS1 era for, or PS2 era for FromSoft. Interesting stuff.
Neat.
Yep. Jella, what does Michael say?
Michael says, I would love to see some streams of Legend of Mana. It's part of the Mana series I have huge affection for, but rarely hear about. It's got interesting mechanics and absolutely stunning hand-painted environments. I think it'd make a great stream.
Hmm.
Which one was Legend of Mana?
I think it's a PlayStation one. Because I know Secret. Yeah, it was a PlayStation Mana game.
I know I've really liked at least some of the Mana series, although I cannot keep them separate to, like, save my life.
Yes. That makes sense, especially when your entire... I mean, I can't keep any of the Tales games separate. Final Fantasy had the way to go because they just numbered them. It was fine. But yeah, Legend of Mana, that was a PlayStation one, and it is gorgeous. Some beautiful sprite work in that. Yeah. Let's see here. David says, I don't tend to watch streams, so I'm not sure what is typical. The only one I can remember watching is Colt playing through Until Dawn, as I was interested in the decisions that he would make. On that note, I would love to watch someone play through the entire Mass Effect trilogy for the first time. For their decisions and reactions.
I haven't played Mass Effect. There's a lot of shit I didn't play.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But anyway.
Yep.
I don't need a list of crap to stream, but, like, that's a thing. It could be eventually.
I mean, one of my prevailing thoughts after I played Mass Effect 2 for the first time was, man, I really wish I hadn't played that game so I could play it for the first time again.
Well, that's a thing that you thought.
I mean, you just always treasured that, like, you're never gonna play that game for the first time again, you know? It's never gonna surprise you in quite the same way.
That cherry done popped.
Yep. I didn't mean to make it crass, but
oh, you didn't make it crass. I made it crass.
Oh man.
But I have to tell you that Darus is now my new favorite person.
Yeah, tell me what Darus says.
I really doubt people will stream the oldies that I'd like to see. But as a kid, I loved Amber Journeys Beyond. Okay, I'm saying that with emphasis. I'll say it in a minute.
Yes.
Okay. It has a really obscure atmosphere, and it is easy getting into it. One of the best scary games of my childhood. Also, my all-time favorite RPG, Shining Force! Because I think that game doesn't have the appreciation it deserves. Finally, Hitman. I love all the ways that game can be beaten. So many streaming possibilities with that one.
So this person is just narrow casting to you, Jala. So,
I know. Yeah. Exactly. Like, indeed. Because, okay, my answer for this question was Amber Journeys Beyond, because Cole started streaming it as like a stream demand request from me, and then it died, and he ended up having to play
Among the Sleep.
Among the Sleep instead. And Among the Sleep is fine. It's a good game. It was nice to watch it again, but I really wanted to see Amber Journeys Beyond because I had played it a long time ago,
mm-hmm.
and I never got to beat the whole thing because, like, my computer crashed or something, and I don't know what happened, but I didn't have the game anymore, and I never got to finish that game, and I never got to see the end of it. And yes, I could watch a Let's Play, but I would rather be in a stream because we've discussed this before. I don't watch things
right.
by myself. I like have to interact with people. So mm-hmm. I need somebody to stream Amber Journeys Beyond. But if you cannot get it to run, Cole, I know I can't get it to run. So I need to rely on somebody else to do it because I can't do the thing.
When I get around to that for the Hex Crank retrospectives, my idea for that is going to be to like run a virtual machine of Windows 95 and see if that works. But I don't know if you can emulate a CD-ROM inside of a virtual machine like that.
Yeah.
That's the only way I can think. Yeah.
If you can get a disk image of the CD-ROM, you should be able to.
Yeah, that is relatively plentiful, but trying to run it on Windows 10 and any kind of compatibility mode, Joe, I can't. I went to great lengths to try and get that to work.
I know. I wasn't fussing at you.
No,
I
feel bad.
I just know that there's no way I can do it. If you can't do it, I'm sure I'm not going to have the patience to do it.
Yeah, no, I wasn't but, being defensive about it. I just felt bad. I mean, for you, but also because it seems like a really interesting and weird game, and it like stopped right as it was getting good, like as I was going into somebody's memories and shit.
Like I had gotten further than that when I had played it before. So I had not even seen any of the new stuff that I hadn't seen before. I had already seen all of that stuff. So I was like, no, but also Darus mentions Shining Force, which, you know, I love the game and everybody talks about Shining Force 2. Shining Force 1 was my very first RPG of any sort. And Shining Force 3 is my absolute favorite Shining Force game, but Shining Force, the original, I have a special place in my heart. If I were to ever stream that, I would probably do Resurrection of the Dark Dragon, the mm-hmm. version that was on, I think it was GBA. So, that particular version was a really good version, in my opinion. So, what they added, I think, was, you know, literally additive without subtracting anything. Because sometimes you can put stuff in and make it worse.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, but like in that particular case, I think it was better for what they did.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I know you've been streaming more recently. Be the change you want to be. You want to see in the world.
You
go hard.
You spoiled it. It's
like, damn it. Oh, I can cut it out. It's fine. It's...
No. We'll fix it in post.
should I fix it in post or?
Well, we will find out.
Okay.
I will find out if you have fixed it in post or if all of this argument is going in.
I mean, is it an argument? Because I can just cut it out.
I can escalate it into an argument.
We can make the argument disappear. Okay.
I don't. No, I'm just
let's move on.
I don't know what I spoiled. go ahead.
No, forward.
I have to say, one thing And this is maybe my only exposure to Shining Force, is I love its cover art just for having a man who is putting the absolute minimum possible effort into fighting skeletons.
Oh, I know. I love it because he's just like, smack. I am not even gonna. And it's so great because, like, that rendition of Max makes him all buff and, like, super buff. And he is totally, like, he's anime dude. He's a little scrawny guy in the actual game. Yeah. So, anyway.
Nice. Well, I'll continue here. Christopher says, Rise of the Triad Dark War. I played that game so much as a kid, and sadly, people don't talk about it as much as your Dooms or Quakes. Yeah.
I wonder, did anyone play the sequel or whatever they just brought out a few years back?
No. But I remember thinking, oh yeah, that was a thing when they released that. Yeah. And it's that, like, Rise of the Triad kind of falls into the same weird little trench as Shadow Warrior for me. In mm-hmm. terms of, like, oh, like these were somebody's favorite shooters, and they've fallen into kind of just complete disrepute because other stuff crowded them out.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just never quite understood what the triad was doing fighting Nazis. I mean, Greg, you know, fighting Nazis is something we all should do, but. Like, why specifically they did to, you know, piss off the triad?
Well, you know, I don't ask questions. I see a Nazi and I know what to do.
In this case, apparently, sure you can.
Well, you know, if that's what you have. I'm not trying to sound tougher than I am. It's just, you know, it's a video game. You know what to do with a Nazi.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Jala, what does Charles say?
Charles says, Darkwood, a top-down survival horror game. It does tension very well and is excellent to watch as well as play. I feel it would be Cole's jam, too.
Yeah.
So am I the only one that's played that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would definitely be your jam. It has a super unique kind of mechanic where it's a top-down game. At the once darkness falls, you basically have to go into your house and attempt to, you know, push furniture up, to block windows and doors and stuff like that. And it's a lot of fun because it really trades on, you know, for example, you'll hear, say, a dresser being pushed away. And it's very much, you know, trying to figure out from the audio cues, like, oh, which room in the house is something trying to, you know, get in? Is it coming closer to me or farther away? You know, does it know I'm here, or is it just kind of exploring?
Yeah. Is it does it mean it, or yeah? I've this has been on my radar for a while because Charles, you and probably other people have recommended it quite a bit. Specifically for streams, a game can either be long, or it can be a game that I haven't played before, but I try to shy away from long games that I haven't played before on streams, because mm-hmm. what I don't want to do is find out that it's not my jam and then
be
stuck with it or duck out of it, you know? So yeah. Yeah. I would, like, need to play it for myself first before I felt comfortable going into it, because I don't want to stream something I'm not enthusiastic about, at least for a very long time, right? And Darkwood is, you know, it's a hefty boy. Yeah. So that's my excuse anyway. But Darkwood is definitely something that is on my radar. Lucas says, The Council, published by Focus Home Interactive. Game has some seriously incredible mechanics vis-a-vis social combat and rewarding alternate play styles, but throws it away on atrocious art direction and a story that goes off the rails in episode 3. The game takes an awesome premise, 1793 secret society occultism, and then shits its pants, sticks its foot in a bucket, and falls down a flight of stairs onto the dining room table in front of the in-laws.
That sounds like something that I need to watch you play, Cole.
Wait a minute. Why did I get stuck with this one?
Because that's how this works.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I don't have the patience for it. You might. You play a lot of bad things, you know?
Like... Yeah. You're right. The Council. Wow. It has really positive reviews on Steam for whatever that matters. That's new.
Yeah. It just came out like what, a year or two ago.
I had never heard of that. I will take it under advisement, especially since it, you know, shits the bed, steps in a bucket, and then falls down the stairs right in front of the in-laws.
Hey, yeah. Add it to your abject suffering. We play bad things for good people.
I think our new, I don't know, we're cycling through different taglines. Oh man. I don't know that I have an answer for this because I don't generally watch people stream, and anything I would watch, I tend to stream myself.
I was going to say, Cole, what would be something that you want to stream sometime that would be an obscure, weird title that you don't see much?
I don't have an answer for that.
Fine. Cop out. Yeah, be that way.
Nah, I got nothing. Like I've got stuff that I like even if it's obscure, like it's probably something that I've had on my Cute. List of things that I want to stream for long enough that like it just, you know, it doesn't feel like it'd be that obscure. Like I don't know.
Yeah.
Like I could say like, oh, I want to stream Sweet Home sometime, but like that's a pretty well known horror game, even if not a lot of people have played it. Stuff like that. So I don't know that I have a satisfactory answer. Jala, how about you?
I already answered. We had my freak out earlier.
Oh yeah, shit. You did, didn't you? Yeah. David, how about you?
Oh man, that's a tough one. I'm not sure that there's necessarily any game, like video games that you know, really popped to mind. Something I would love to see is, you know, I've been kind of binging on some of the pen and paper streams that have become popular, and I would love to see some of the spy themed settings that have been developed. Similarly, there's a number of really good, like, games that kind of, I don't know, attempt to recreate, like, the Shaw Brothers, you know, Chop Saki kung fu movies that, you know, I feel like could be really awesome.
You know what would also be awesome is Kobold's Ate My Baby, where everybody's drinking.
Hmm.
That would
also
be the best.
Also, Kobold's Ate My Baby while everybody's drinking. Would be an amazing one.
While everybody's drinking an official part of the title?
Well, it's called the Beer and Pretzels RPG, so like it's literally supposed to be about drinking, and it like part of the thing is, you know, you are acting like a kobold, which means that you get to make kobold noises and do stuff like gesticulate as a kobold. So, you know, it gets like more and more ridiculous, especially as people are, you know, getting drunk,
of course.
So,
you know, to give you an idea, if I remember correctly, one of the abilities you can, or one of the spells you can learn is like what it's like vampire invisibility, where you're invisible as long as you keep your arm, as long as the actual player keeps their arms crossed like a mopey vampire.
Okay. I gotcha.
But yeah. There's also like lots of other stuff. But anyway, yeah, it's a fun premise of a game, and yeah, it's a thing that I would love to see streamed or to stream sometime if I could rustle up people to do it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah,
nice. Well, thank you everybody for answering that. The question that we asked you, if you would like to answer other questions in the future, I might recommend that on Facebook, you go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. And I would also like to thank Jala for putting up the question and Michael for suggesting the question. You know, just while I'm changing up the way I say everything now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I know. That's like the curse, because you were like, we are fated to start with the brief. And in the background, I was silently seething and going, it's because of you. It's because of you.
Also, I'm jealous of the streaming setup and the photo that you posted. I don't know who that belongs to. But that Neumann mic that is hanging above the desk is, I believe, either a $700 microphone or a $1,700 microphone, depending on what it is. So
I don't know whose setup that is either, but that's a lot of screens, man.
That is a lot of screens.
Yeah.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the things we have been playing over the past week or so, or a period of time or so. Jala, it's been a while since you've been on. What have you been playing?
Well, in Octopath Traveler, I finished Therion Chapter 4. That's the first one of the Chapter 4s that I have gotten done. And I got to see credits, which that's going to get annoying if I have to see credits every time I get to the end of somebody's Chapter 4. Because then there's post-game content. So, after that, there's end-game stuff. So, yeah, that's a thing. I mean, I finished getting to all the different towns and unlocking the rest of the map. I did not get the upper level secondary classes yet. I suppose I am about the level where I could start doing that, but I have not done it at this juncture. So I may try to do another Chapter 4 quest or two before I do that, just because I've been told that you get your lunch eaten when you go try to fight the bosses that, you know, are the wall between you and those classes. So we will see. However, I am about 70 hours into Octopath Traveler, and I finally got to the point where I needed a break from it. I finally reached the threshold for, you know, Jala needs to stop playing the JRPG now. And that's amazing. Because, like, you guys remember, it was 20 hours or something like that. Maybe not even. Maybe it was like 15 hours when I first started getting into my JRPG bent, you know, before I needed to take a break. So
I got
my tolerance level up to 70 hours.
70 whole hours. Just shy of 3 days.
I know. Oh, my God. So I'm proud of myself. But anyway, that is all I have gotten to play in that, because I just got to the point where I'm just like, it's not even that there's anything wrong. I just got to the point where I'm just like, you know, I just don't want to be playing this. I want to be playing something else.
I mean, it's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, like, 70 hours after that long of literally just playing that game and not playing anything else, like, yeah, it's time for a break.
Yeah.
So I went from that into dusting off my streaming cap, and I did some streaming. I did Abyss Odyssey with David. Woo!
Yeah,
I will let David talk about that, because I've talked about Abyss Odyssey to death. So I'll just kind of skip over that. And then I'll mention the other thing I've been streaming. I also streamed Vampyr. I got back to playing that.
Oh,
but
nice.
I decided I was going to stream it, so that way I've got people experiencing it with me, and that way I'm, you know, like, doing the thing with folks.
No, you're making choices out in public so people can judge you.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Do people give you shit if you do the bad thing? Because people give me shit.
I think people know better than to give me shit. That's like that's not like a threat. I think that's just like, people know that I will be very upset. And
people know that you'll end them. Yeah.
Yeah. Besides which, like, I don't, I except for you, Cole, I don't give people shit usually.
So, they know that, you know, where their tables live.
Right.
All I can remember is just the people gasping, people clutching their pearls over some of the decisions that I made in Soma, which just revealed what I consider to be the line where life begins and ends, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
continue. I'm sorry.
Well, okay. So
I'm curious, what is your line?
It is pretty endemic to the stream, and also I don't want to spoil things that happen in Soma, because it's actually a good game people should play. So, continue, Jala.
So I was in Chapter 3, and I was running after Sean Hampton, the sad saint, who is like a priest guy who ended up turning into a Skull, which is a not like a vampire proper, but, you know, a thrall, I guess you could say, or like a half vamp or something.
Yeah,
like a, you know,
like a Renfield.
okay.
Yeah.
So he turned into one of those. And so I had to go run after him because somebody died in the hospital. And, you know, he went missing and this person died. And so, you know, that's what my mission was. Well, I came across a guy who made me very happy. His name was Ichabod Throgmorton. And he is a very short vampire hunter who's never killed a vampire before.
Yay.
But he's like, yeah, he's not even part of like the vampire hunting order because there is one. He just is wandering around on his own putting up anti-vampire posters, which are so awesome. They look like a big red Nosferatu over the city of London. And it's like, they're great. I had a screenshot out there somewhere. I will find it later when I am not talking so I do not get distracted. However, it is very entertaining. And it was great because he asked me, a vampire, to help him put up posters to warn people of the vampire threat. And I did. And it was great. And, you know, just like the way that my character, Jonathan Reed's voice was like entertained, like subtly entertained without, you know, being directly laughing in this man's face was great. Like, you know, and then at one point when I finished putting up all the posters, he's like, so I'm a vampire putting up these anti-vampire posters for a vampire hunter. So does that make me a double or a triple agent? You know, like he's just sitting there like giggling basically about this thing that he's doing. So that was pretty great.
So did you ever catch Sean Hannity?
Sean Hampton. I did come across him. And there was a sewer level. I got to the sewer level, but it actually wasn't bad, believe it or not. The thing that entertained me was that there were only 3 rats in the sewers, but there's like a fuck ton of rats out above in the normal world. So that made me laugh.
I can't blame them. Why would they want to be down in the sewers?
Well, that's where you get your blood from when you need it to recharge. So it's kind of inconvenient that there's only 3 in the sewer right before a boss battle. Thanks. So Virgil Banhammer or whatever his name is some big juggernaut looking dude that you have to go fight at this point. And the first time I was streaming, it was at the very end of my stream that I came across this guy. And I was like, I tried it a couple of times and I'm like, never mind. I'm too tired to care about this right now. So I just turned it off. And then the next time I streamed the next weekend, I ended up killing him in one go. I basically just had to go restock my stuff and be very patient. Which, you know, I didn't have the patience the first time around. So that's why I died. Because I was like, I'm not even going to.
Yeah.
But so I did that. And oh, my God, the end of the last stream that I did was great. There was so much wonderful narrative stuff. I was just like, my faces. I posted pictures of, you know, screenshots of my face from the stream. I had some expressions going. you can check that stream out, like the archive of that on my YouTube. So the one that says Fergal Banhammer or Fergal or something.
Right.
Some weird unpronounceable name in SideQuest. That's the one where like my face for like the last third of the stream, I just had this expression. So
was it just because it hit hard or it was operating in a space you didn't expect?
There were some pretty extreme things that were going on and I was like, oh snap. And then like, okay, the main character guy, Jonathan Reed, is usually very mild mannered and stuff, but every once in a while he gets really aggressive and he got really, really aggressive about some stuff that was real sensitive. And I'm like, oh my God. Oh dude, he's being like commanding and just like brutal. Holy crap. You know, like I was just like, oh wow. So I had a great reaction to that, and I was thrilled with the narrative beats. And when I stopped the stream, it ended on another murder happening, and then the murdered person had my mom's brooch. And I'm like, oh, my God, maybe your mom's a vampire. Who knows what's going on? Oh, my God. So, like, now I have to figure out what's going on. And so there's a lot of really good stuff happening. I'm excited about that. The people who have been watching the stream have been like, yeah, the combat's all right. It's interesting. you know, but that's not like the thing that's exciting about it. The exciting part is all the narrative stuff, which is why Mai mentioned that they do have a like narrative mode now where you can go in and like just avoid all battles. There's no battles in it.
Okay.
But I already started my game before that was a thing. So I don't have the option at this juncture to go and change it. It's not like you can change it mid-play. You have to pick at the beginning, apparently.
But I mean, the choices you're making in the talky bits kind of inform what kind of vampire you're going to be in the fighty bits, right?
You get the choice of using your experience that you gain from eating folks, killing people, and doing side quests. You get all of this experience from those things, and of course, story beats. So you have the choice of leveling up your dude however you want to when you go to rest at night. So not necessarily, like, you can make whatever choice you want to in the narrative bits, but you still have the XP to spend however you want to. So, you know, like, you can, I think I even respect my guy at one point. I just, like, wiped everything that I had done and respect him. I don't remember if that had a cost associated with it or if it was just something you can do as a free action. But yeah, I did respect him at some juncture because I was like, nah, I don't really want that skill. I want to change it.
Yeah.
You know, so I was able to do that.
As a side note, you're a vampire that goes to sleep at night?
You can rest, and when you choose to rest and level up, you basically are using your XP to, you know, gain whatever. But, like, when you let the night pass without, you know, running around and doing stuff, what also happens is the stability of the district changes. If you've killed somebody, then what happens is, like, the stability goes down. And as the stability goes down, different people get sick. And if you leave people sick for a long period of time over the course of several nights, then the health of the district goes down as well. So, like, you know, it's not always the best option to go and, you know, rest and level up, because that can have dire consequences on your, you know, different regions that you're trying to get, you know, get information from and work through. Because when people are sick, they are, like, I think it affects whether or not people open up to you as well. I could be wrong on that. But it also changes the number of bad guys and what level they are, I think. So, like, it has lots of negative consequences if you have the health of the district go down too low. So it's always an important thing that before you rest, you make sure that you've healed everybody up as much as you can, that you've, you know, done everything you want to do before you do that. So, but So, I mean, like, it's got a consequence to it. It's not just like whatever. But yeah, just your flippant comment about, you know, a vampire resting at night. Yeah, I know. But that's how they do the leveling. And there is a potential penalty to that depending upon what happened. Like, my choice at the end of this last stream, I got the little message on the top of my screen that said the district will, you know, feel the effects of whatever you did, like the negative penalty note, as if I had killed somebody, although I didn't. So that means that the next time that I sleep, that district's health is going to go down. So yay. That means it'll be unstable. Yay.
Consequences.
So, yep. Consequences and things. So I've been having fun with that. I liked streaming it because that way I can kind of chill with people. And like I said, you get to see me not, you know, take stuff super seriously. Like, you know, like, I'm into the narrative bits, but, like, when I'm doing the combat, I'm just like, as long as I live, it doesn't really matter. I don't care.
Yeah.
So
roll with it.
Yep. But the last thing that I played is I played some of Super Mario Odyssey, believe it or not. So that's a little left field, right? That's not something you'd expect.
From Abyss to Super Mario, every Odyssey. Assassin's Creed, no, not yet. But.
Yeah, right. But, so yeah, it's a 3D Mario game.
Ooh, boy.
Woo! I'm in the desert world where there's the inverted pyramid. I think that's where I stopped. So I will say this. This is my controversial opinion on this game. I can't really get into it. It's too kiddy. It plays really well, and it's fun enough anyway, but like, it's not overly challenging, and even though it's, like, really whimsical, and therefore it's kind of charming because of the whimsy, I can only take it in small doses. Like, I'm not excited to go back and play more of it, for example. Yeah. So, like, I set it down, and I don't know that I'm going to be picking it up again. I probably am going to go pick up Octopath Traveler. I had Odyssey in my head, so thank you, Cole. I couldn't remember the name of the thing I was going to play. But yeah, like I will probably go back to Octopath Traveler before I go back and play any more Mario, because yeah. I'm just like, I mean, like, it plays fine, but I'm just, I don't know if it's just my mood right now that I just, I don't have an interest in that particular type of game or what.
Yeah, so I mean, between Octopath Traveler and Vampire, like, I don't know, it's, Mario Odyssey is a bit of an outlier in terms of tone. Like, when you say it's kiddie, like, you know, say it plays well, is it just that it's, like, too easy for you? Like, it's not engaging, or?
It is too easy. Like, the bosses and stuff aren't really a thing, and it's all right.
Yeah.
But it's not like, when I'm playing it, I'm like, okay, this is kind of cute, but I could be doing something else.
Yeah.
You know, they get like, I don't feel very involved in it, I guess. It's like on autopilot to a degree. And it's like, I don't want to play something just because it's on autopilot. You know, like I would like to really be feeling like I'm getting something out of it. Like, you know, yeah. I got really worked up with the Vampire stream, for example, and I had fun co-oping with David in Abyss Odyssey. And, you know, Octopath Traveler, I needed a break from. So, you know, I set that one down, but I was enjoying what I was doing and making progress. I was barreling through that game pretty fast for me, mm-hmm. you know. And I just didn't feel like there was enough there to keep me excited. So,
yeah, no, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, for me, Super Mario Odyssey had just an incredibly short half-life, kind of for similar reasons. Like, it was showing me new ideas, but it just wasn't enough. And I think that any Mario game, but like, you know, maybe I feel it more with 3D Mario games because those are not really my favorite ones. But any Mario games kind of has a little bit of a Final Fantasy problem, or, you know, Final Fantasy 13 problem rather, where like, oh, like you just have to play through to like the second campaign, right? Like the point in a Mario game up through the credits, that's like it teaching you how to play the game. And then it shows you the challenge stages, or in Mario Odyssey's case, like it reveals a whole new set of moons for you to get. And those are the real hard ones to get. And I just don't know that I have that whole first run in me, especially when 3D Mario stuff just, again, is at my speed.
Yeah. And that's kind of like where I lie. Like, there's some fun things that happen in this game that I hadn't seen before. Like, when it switches, you go through a pipe and it switches to 2D Mario. That's really awesome.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are other points where I'm just like, it's okay. I mean, it just feels, you know, quasi-open world. Okay, cool. Except there's other types of open world-ish games that I would rather be playing other than this. Yeah. So,
I mean, it charmed the pants off of me. Like,
it's very charming. It's very cute. It's very charming. It's got, like, great art direction. The game feels wonderful to play.
It looks amazing, it's really too. Solid. I mean, just, like fidelity. Like, they made a good choice by having that first world be set in, like, Feltland or whatever. Because, like, like this is the hottest, the most detailed I've ever seen a Nintendo game get. And they're kind of nailing it.
Yeah, and like there's a lot of stuff to be said about it, and I can totally understand where people are like, yeah, this is such a great game, but it's kind of like with Breath of the Wild, where I there's not enough there for me particularly to make me excited to keep going with it, you know? Like, I don't know, I gave Breath of the Wild a little bit more time, mostly because that one is an actual open world and it has a little bit more by way of mechanics to play with, you know? Yeah. But it's good. It's just like not my jam in particular. And
Internet. Something can't just not be for you.
But I will eventually probably go and play some more of it, and it might strike me different later.
Yeah.
The thing is that there are many times where I will be playing games that are completely, you know, discordant, you know, theming. So I don't necessarily think it's because, oh, you're playing Vampyr and, you know, Octopath Traveler and this is like left field. You know, I'm left field, and like from minute to minute, I could have a different opinion of things and act a totally different way, you know? So like, whatever. I don't think that's it. I think it's just, I don't know. Generally speaking, the mindset that I've been in for the last several months, striving towards the things that I've been striving for, like this is just not where my head is right now, you know, and it may never, my head may never be in the Mario space. I don't know. It might be, but you know, I'm not holding my breath waiting. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. No, I mean, you were kind of previewing, at least in stream chat, about like, oh, I've got a controversial opinion about Super Mario Odyssey. Yeah. I kind of figured this would be, but like, no, I think we're both in the same line about it. So you at least have, you know, that somebody else in the world exists with that opinion of that game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So mostly it's just because I know so many people really, really love that game. And, you know, like I don't have a complaint about it. I mean, you know, what I'm saying is just it's just not, you know, it's not clicking all of the boxes for me particularly. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So that's all I got. That's what I played. Any questions?
No.
Cool.
Not for me. David, I'm curious, first about Abyss Odyssey and then what else you've been playing.
Sure. Yeah. So, Abyss Odyssey, we've kind of talked about it before. It's a, how quite would you describe it? It has gameplay that's very much patterned off of Super Smash Bros. However, it's, you know, exclusively player versus environment. The plot line is that there is a warlock sleeping under the, I think it's the capital of Chile, and his nightmares are producing basically monsters that are traveling up through the abyss and attacking people. So you have to take on the role of one of the more heroic manifestations of his dreams and journey down through the abyss to fight him. The whole thing has a amazing Art Nouveau graphical style.
Mm-hmm.
It also has something I kind of enjoy is part of the plot line was that the warlock grew up in a religious family.
Okay.
And so some of a number of the bosses are kind of take on the role of his like mental image of some of the more abstract scenes from the Bible. So like some of the weird stuff that from like Revelation and stuff like that, where it's, you know, the living beast with like three heads and those sorts of things.
Are there biblically accurate angels?
I haven't seen that, although that likewise would be terrifying. I think my favorite is one of them is a very little depiction of there's a passage that talks about it's like the physical embodiment of the word of the Lord, where literally it's like a man who's like has a sword coming out of his mouth.
Okay.
It's just, you know, it's really weird stuff, but done in a very artistic hand, I don't know, painted or drawn style.
Really lush animation, 2.5D style, kind of like a mm-hmm. like a dollhouse cutaway as you move between rooms.
Exactly. Yep. And so Jala played
Katrien.
Who is the, the warlock's dead girlfriend, right?
Wife, wasn't it?
Wife. One or the other. And then I played as the ghost monk, who is apparently the embodiment of all of the people that have died in the abyss. And it's just kind of an edgelord type of guy. But it also has, you can meet and get advice from a skeleton mariachi, which, I mean, that pretty much pays for the price of admission itself. So ultimately, we actually made it to the final boss, but then we're very, very quickly overrun by, I think,
The fish. He shoots out a bunch of, like, a whole school of fish that fly through the air, and that's one of the things that shows up in the level, too, in the levels that you go through, specifically in the frost levels. They freeze you midair. I don't know how this works out and how the logic works on this, but then again, it's Nightmare Country, so whatever, you know? But he also, it's not just him. He also has a couple of ads. He's got a couple of other basically mini bosses with him. So you have three on two going on. So there's that. But we did get him down to like half health before we died, and we still can go back, you know, and go from our save point the next time we try. So.
Yeah. One of the things I'd kind of forgotten that I think's just kind of interesting, kind of fun, just from a, I don't know, sort of story-supporting narrative, is when you die, you actually then temporarily take on the role of one of the Chilean soldiers that's, venturing into the abyss to try to... stop the monsters. So it depends specifically on your class. So like as the Ghost Monk, I'm was specifically a firefighter, whereas I think Jala, you were like a rifleman, right?
I was a regular soldier dude. So yeah, and when you place, because basically the way that you save in this game, since it is a roguelike, you can save once, but you have to basically buy a camp token from a merchant that is wandering around in the abyss. And I think he's undead too, isn't he? Like the shopkeeper guy. But
yeah,
anyway,
I think everyone's skeleton.
Except for the soldiers. And
right.
So you can buy a camp token and you can place it at a site, and depending upon the level of the camp token, you get a certain number of ads. You get like firefighters and soldiers who basically come and help fight everything on the level for you. So they will follow you around and help you out, sort of like familiars around the area where that camp is, and kind of guard that camp. And so when you come back to life, after you've died as both your main person, Catrien, or the Ghost Monk, and then also as the soldiers, when you finally, you know, die completely, you get resurrected there, and then you've got those guards around where you resurrect from. So it's pretty cool.
And you can likewise, there's a mechanic that allows you to basically, like, absorb the soul of one of the monsters, and then you can, you know, play as them with their full moveset. So, you know, anything you can fight against, you can... play as, which for me basically just means I become a mummy and abuse its long-range vomit effect attack.
Yep. But you can play as any one of the little critters in there. So, like, that means that you have a ton of different types of movesets to pick up and use throughout the entire time that you're playing this game. So the replay value, between the fact that it is roguelike and all of the levels change and the layouts change, everything is different from game to game. But then, like, you also pick up these other abilities and these other characters to play as until their health bar runs out, and then, you know, they disappear. Like, that's really awesome. There's also rooms where once you drop into them, you are automatically a monster, and you have to fight other monsters. And if you can survive that room as that monster, you get their, like, the ability to change into that monster from that point until it runs out of health. So, you know, they will hand it to you for free if you can survive that particular level. And if you don't, if you die as that monster, you just start over at the next level down as your original person with no health loss. So there's no penalty if you fail. But if you succeed, you get extra life, basically. So... pretty cool.
Nice. Yeah.
So other than that, I actually picked up Immortal Unchained.
Oh, dang.
Yeah. Ooh. So that's been kind of fun. It's I'm really interested to see I've been running all over the place, so I haven't been keeping up on the level as my or the Duckfeed as much yet. Has your show on that come out yet?
Yeah, the last episode in that series just came out yesterday as we're recording. So we've played through it and talked through it, and our opinion is generally positive.
Yeah, so I'm really interested to see, because I feel like kind of my take on it is, compared to it, it very much feels like not just a game that's like, hey, I want some of that, you know, Soulsborne money.
Right.
You know, it strikes me as, you know, so a team that, you know, really, you know, wanted to kind of try to make a interesting backstory and, you know, is doing something new in terms of the gameplay, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really enjoy the, I'm not even sure how you, you know, describe this story. I mean, it's sort of just this weird, I don't know, kind of, you know, almost parable style, like dark fantasy sci-fi mashup.
Yeah, it's like it is a sci-fi fantasy retelling of really, really Norse style mythology. Like, there are direct parallels that can be drawn to Norse mythology, especially as you proceed onward through the game. Like, if you know what things map on, it actually helps you understand a little bit of like how things interact.
Sure. That actually makes a lot of sense now that you mentioned that.
Yeah.
And you know, it's surprising, at least to me, how well the first person third person shooter stuff maps to some of the Souls style gameplay. You know, in particular, I was kind of surprised how the sort of emphasis on, you know, being very, very aware of your surroundings and kind of watching out for ambushes and that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
You know, maps in a really interesting way to, you know, the need to, you know, dive into cover and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, I've not really played before that I can think of a shooter that had a iframe dodge.
Yeah, and that like expects you to use it. Like, iframe dodges are imperative to Souls, and like, it's part of the tutorial. There is a place you cannot get through if you do not dodge through it.
Right, exactly. And, you know, it seems like the dodge feels like, from a strictly objective gameplay standpoint, you know, much more forgiving in terms of how many iframes it gives you compared to a Souls game. But I feel like that's kind of a direct, you know, adjustment for the more action-oriented gameplay. So the end result is that it seems like it's designed explicitly around, you know, the idea of, you know, in a shooter, you're not dodging an attack so much as you're dodging like a burst of fire.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, a little bit more. And at least to me, it felt very much like, you know, when I wanted to dodge through something and, like, you know, had the presence of mind to do so, I generally could, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, so really, really enjoying it. Although, on the other hand, like, it strikes me as being, like, in a lot of ways, a profoundly and in some ways very fundamentally flawed game. Just in terms of, you know, there's a ton of things it gets right, but there's also a lot of things it feels, at least to me, like it gets wrong.
What's like the main thing that sticks out for you as being wrong or off?
I think the biggest one for me is that it feels very much like, you know, it's much, much easier to die much faster than in your average Souls game, partially because of the because of it being more action oriented, and therefore it felt much more like it didn't to me have the feeling of, you know, most of my deaths being deserved.
Okay.
You know, there were just a number of times where I would, you know, literally like five times in a row, you know, fight through the same, horde of enemies, only to, you know, get to some enemy that was, you know, maybe a little bit cheap or, you know, in a particularly bad, situation, and just get, you know, instantly slaughtered and have to do it all over again. Whereas in, you know, most of the Souls games, you know, definitely they are very challenging, but it generally felt like I was always, you know, kind of advancing as opposed to throwing myself against the wall.
Yeah. Can I ask where you, where you're at in the game? Like how much of it you've done?
So currently I'm in, the Verdant or whatever?
Viridian, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm trying and very much failing to beat the boss.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, like, the melee guy with the halberd?
Yeah, that summons the poison enemies.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Up on, who's, like, the enemies who are removed from the arena but can still hit you.
Right, and yeah. That would be an example of, like, that's a fight that, to me, I guess, for lack of a better word, not even so much seems unfair so much as it is just not fun.
Yeah, it's a weird fit for the style of game it is. Like, right. it feels like a melee fight.
Exactly. Well, and I think also... you know, it's one of those things that, again, in this sort of genre where things is supposed to be, supposed to be very difficult, I wouldn't so much say that this is always wrong, but I will say I feel like the gameplay has a tendency to fall apart anytime you fight enemies that have any sort of, like, knockdown effect.
Oh, yeah. Knockdown is always bullshit.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing that's actually is going to be, like, honestly might be a deal breaker for me is in that level, there's a, NPC that you're sort of, repeatedly, escorting, and basically got to a point where, had gone through a huge, very long, sequence of fights. And for some reason, the, bonfire equivalent is behind a locked door you can't get to.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically had about 10% of my health and almost no ammo. And, got to the next part of his story, which immediately triggers an ambush. And so I was almost instantly killed. And it's like, oh, NPC's dead now. Quest failed.
Yeah, no, that's a thing. It's going to happen again when you get to Apexian. Like, the NPC quests, aside from Bren, are bullshit.
Yeah, so that's why I'd say where it's kind of a funny thing where it's a very, very good game, but I'd categorize it as being very, very flawed at the same way. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I feel like it's though says something that, like, I totally don't hold that against it, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah. It's okay for something to be flawed, and, like, by and large, it's pretty successful at what it tries to do, and it's a thing that, you know, that is improbable that it would get it as good as it does.
Yeah, totally. So I'm interested to know what sort of loadout did you go with?
So for me, I kind of cheaped out is maybe the wrong word. So primarily I did auto shotguns, and then I found a launcher that I really liked, specifically a grenade launcher that did energy damage that kind of carried me through the bulk of the game. I didn't really fuck around with snipers, because even though they're really powerful, the limited ammo really bumped me out. Sure. Like submachine guns or assault rifles just kind of felt like they didn't put stuff down quickly enough for me to survive encounters. And that ended up being the way to go in my experience. Auto shotguns are really good and effective, and you kind of continue to find good ones.
Sure. Yeah. So I feel like that's actually another thing that, again, is something that I would say is, you know, pretty unique within the Soulsborne type thing is it very much emphasizes virtually every enemy, if not every enemy, has a large glowing weak spot on their back. And so there's a lot, it gets a lot of gameplay mileage out of either, you know, A, you like circle dodging around someone, or, you know, taking advantage of when they reload, or even on some of the melee enemies, like timing when they, you know, do a swing and, you know, turn part of their back to you to, you know, zero in on that weak point.
Yeah.
And, you know, particularly with, like, for example, I'm using the pump shotgun, and like that is super, super satisfying to be able to just nail a weak spot and, you know, take someone out.
They do really, really good stuff consistently with the pace of play and, you know, messing around with when and for how long those weak spots are exposed. Additionally, like, that is absolutely necessary, like, especially with bosses, but just throughout the runs, because your ammo is limited and refilling your ammo, you know, uses a consumable that, you know, is not necessarily readily available all the time.
Right.
Like, hitting those criticals, like getting the weak spot, is a matter of survival, because it's the difference between using 10 shots or 2 shots, you know, which limits the number of enemies you can safely fight, and on down the line. Like, there are a lot of dependencies behind nailing those weak spots.
Yeah, and it gets some, you know, kind of interesting, you know, it strikes me as kind of interesting in that I don't know if it's because I've, you know, played, you know, a number of the Souls games, or the game's catering to that, or just it does a really good job of, you know, teaching you this, but it feels like from that, you get very quickly to the point where you start doing some of the sort of more advanced Soulsborne style tactics, where you're doing, like, you know, even though an enemy is, say, a melee enemy that can one-shot you, like, the best idea is to be right in their face and, like, sidestep. So, yeah. What the biggest, I think, actually, strangely enough, gameplay thing that I feel like they kind of overlooked is just being able to run past enemies doesn't really work when they have guns, and I feel like is actually kind of a fairly important part of the Souls thing.
And I think
that's, you know, to the degree that, like I said, some of the areas feel kind of frustrating, I think that's actually one of the big contributors, which is just kind of funny.
Yeah, no, absolutely a thing. And in addition to what you've already noticed, they change enemies up in certain ways to make it even less viable to get past them. So you are going to be fighting for every inch. There's no way to, like, you know, because in a Souls game, if you know the way to the boss and, you know, you're just kind of done with this shit, you can find ways to, you know, juke around people. Sorry, I said juke Jala. you can juke around people to make the run. Here, you're not going to be skipping a lot of the stages.
Right, exactly. So, but yeah, other than that, the other thing I'd chat out as is I feel like they somehow managed to have even more, you know, exaggeratedly epic, like, architecture than a lot of the Souls games do.
There's cool stuff.
You know, there is a lot of, like, yeah, we could build a castle, but what if the castle was, like, 1,000 stories tall?
Yeah. Well, just by being you know, futuristic, they open up a lot of new visual vocabulary.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm interested to see. I really hope, you know, I'm a little worried there's virtually no, like, wiki support for this, stuff like that,
nope.
Which makes me a little worried, like, how did this do financially? Because, you know, this is a team, like, I would really, really like to, you know, see games from in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So, also, I love their like, mascot. It's what is it? It's, like, Toadman Games or whatever.
Yep.
And it's literally just, like,
yeah,
like a toad, like, yeah, smoking a cigar.
Yeah, Toad Gentleman. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's all I've been playing. So it's been a lot of good, kind of silly stuff.
Yeah. Well, to put your mind at ease a little bit about Toadman and the relative success of this, like, they're continuing to work on it, and there's an expansion coming out here pretty soon, here in a couple of months. So, like, I don't know. You wouldn't do that if the game wasn't doing at least okay. You know, it didn't,
right.
It didn't review well, but also it didn't review at all, really. There were, like, if you look on Metacritic, it's a bunch of kind of no-name places that have reviewed it. So I think that, what I hope is they get enough to cross the finish line on this one and start up or secure funding for a new thing. And I think that a lot of people, once they play their new thing, which is assured to be interesting at the very least and good, probably, you know, people look back and say, oh yeah, Immortal Unchained. People could have played more of that, and they should have, because it's good. So
yeah. So I'm sorry, one other thing I wanted to shout out is I really, really like the way they did do armor, which I didn't think I would, because I'm a huge, like, fan of collecting loot, stuff like that, and that doesn't really work. You know, occasionally get shrines that give you very discreet upgrades.
Yeah.
But what I love about it is each one gives you a specific, you know, small, like, element of, you know, clothing that your character has.
Mm-hmm.
So like one of the early ones, it literally just is like a kind of like a military style scarf that mm-hmm. you get.
Yep.
And so, you know, as you go along, you go from being literally wearing nothing but a loincloth to, like, slowly building up to, you know, looking, I don't know, a little bit Doom Guy-esque.
Yeah.
So, and I love just the fact that, you know, you can fairly extensively customize your appearance, as long as you're cool with looking like, you know, pissed off MMA fighter dude.
Yeah, Gary called it create a cretin.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
That is exactly it.
I feel like I'm giving away everything that's in those premium episodes of Bonfire Chat. Oh.
That was his ploy all along.
Nice. Well, yeah, I'm happy that you're digging it. I'd be curious to hear what you think after you get off of Viridian, because Apexian is appreciably different.
Yeah.
No. Cool.
Sure.
Yeah. So, is that everything, David?
Yep.
Yeah. Fortunately for the runtime of this episode, I have not been playing an awful lot of stuff. Aside from things that are assignments for other shows, trying to clear the docket for Sekiro. I have been playing and streaming the DLC for The Evil Within, the first Evil Within. I desperately had to clarify every time I tweeted about it that I am not playing Evil Within 2. No, I have not played Evil Within 2. I intend to. This is the first game. Yeah. So there were two main storyline DLCs released for The Evil Within, a game that I didn't particularly care for, but I heard the DLCs were good. It's two parts of, you know, a continuing story. The assignment and then the consequence, where you are playing as Detective Kidman, the female police officer who goes into the asylum alongside the main character of the main game, Sebastian. But she has her own kind of angle that she is working. She has a you know, a different allegiance than the other characters from the main game. The biggest difference and the biggest departure in these is that, at least for the first episode, it is entirely non-combat. So you are exploring these senseless mindscapes and doing a little bit of light stealth, but it is mostly pursuit based and it is mostly exploration based, which is good because the combat in The Evil Within was frustrating and hellish, full of instant death. You were having to manage extremely limited resources, extremely limited even for survival horror games. So I was really relieved that, like, in the first episode, when there was shooting, you know, it was like a little almost on rails section where you were like pinned down and you were trying to fend off enemies who were coming at you with infinite ammo. Cool. They just wanted to spice it up, put a little bit of shooting in. We have a shooting engine. Let's do it. Good. Imagine my dismay when in the second episode they add combat and it just keeps getting more and more combat heavy.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and, you know, at the end, it is very much just kind of akin to just a regular Evil Within kind of deal. So it is a real almost like bait and switch where it feels like they were designing to their strengths, you know, and they demonstrated like, yeah, we realize we gave you the not fun part of this game in the main game. Here's something cool in this world. You can get this batshit story and that is satisfying and good. And then up slowly, we're back on our bullshit again. I ended it feeling pretty dissatisfied. Pretty dissatisfied generally with the DLC, even though weirdly it does fill in holes in the incomprehensible story of the first game. You know, it answers questions and provides different perspective on some of the events that happen. So in that way, it is a bit of a success, if you can call something that literally just fills in incomplete and baffling information, you know, a success. Yeah. So would I recommend that you play it? No, probably not. Probably for fans of the genre. Oh, nope, not even for that. I'm a fan of the genre, and I would say no. I am curious about The Evil Within 2, though.
Yeah, this looks amazing.
Yeah, this could be twice bitten, four times shy, but like people who I trust, namely Ben and Zach from Video Games Hot Dog, have said good things about The Evil Within 2, and, you know, I trust them. I don't think they're going to steer me wrong intentionally anyway. I don't think this is a years long plot to gaslight me. So I'm going to give the series a break for a little bit and then give it a shot on my own.
Yay.
Dolly, you were there for some of the Evil Within stuff.
Some of it. And then I wandered off. Sorry. Yeah.
That's fine.
I don't know. I don't really have much of an opinion on it because like I caught some of it at the beginning when you were first starting it out. And then like I popped in a couple more times, but like I was starting working on a painting, which you can see on my social network stuff.
Yep.
So like I was absorbed and not really paying attention to streaming at all because I was painting. So
I gotcha. Yeah.
Apologies.
That'll teach you to art.
Yeah. I made art things. It was nice. You should look at them.
Yeah. Cool. So that's it. The Evil Within, the assignment, the consequence. I cannot emphasize enough the first game, not the second game. How do you all feel about bundling it up?
I feel buttons.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level, level number 277. We really appreciate you taking the time. We'll try and make it a little while before we take another week off. Regardless, we would love you if you came back next week. We would also love if you checked out the Patreon and if you left us a rating or review. It's been a little bit since we've gotten one of those, and we do so enjoy when you do that. Otherwise, you know, tell friends, all the usual stuff that I run down. Am I forgetting anything?
Can we tell them about this weekend's thing?
Yes, let's do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for the Hex Crank stream, Jala and I are going to be playing Resident Evil 6.
Yeah.
So, so we haven't talked about this. I don't know if you intend to like stick around and complete the game with me.
Yeah.
That'll probably take several weekends. So we may end up needing to plan around that, but at the very least we're going to start out with Leon and maybe try to fight, you know, get to the point where we fight the monster made of boobs.
The booby lady. Yeah. That falls into the abyss, never to be seen again, but did not actually come back, which is weird. Yeah.
Unlike the rest of the game where that's basically the entire plot.
Yeah. Everything is sensible. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, so we're gonna be doing that regular time on Hex Crank.
So you guys going to, at least if you get that far, wherever, do the Ada campaign?
Yeah, eventually, which means that we get to do that fun joy again.
Yeah.
You know, I will admit that I have only played the Ada campaign like a couple of times, as much as I've gone through the game with a bunch of different people, because like what'll happen is we'll start it and then whoever I'm playing with is just like, oh, this is bullshit, and we just stop. So like, yeah, it's not even me saying it.
I can count the number of times I've said this is bullshit and stopped on a stream on one hand.
Yeah. So. Well, that means that we're gonna be doing it.
Probably.
To be fair, that campaign super, super is bullshit.
But also, to be fair, it's also really, really short, so it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. Cool. Well, I think that's everything.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I've been David Meismith. You can find me, you know, lurking behind you about to strike.
And I'm Jalachan in places, including Twitch.
Mm-hmm. And stick around for some titles. So I only have one, which is a question. How are you older than me?
Well, I have three, one of which is extremely short and the other two are very long.
Okay.
So I don't even know how to begin searching for this. Grimble Fark. And I'm hearing an ad and I want to die.
All right. Okay, David?
I was slacking off this time.
It's all right. I like how are you older than me? I know that was mine, and I wrote it down on that shitty to vote for your own. That got a reaction from all y'all.
Well, and you might have written it down, but I was the one who said it. Yes!
Yeah.
I win again. Woo!
How do you feel about that, David?
It was a contest, but yeah.
I can support this.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to go.
Yay. I'm going to go too. And I'm going to eat.
Enjoy food, Jala. Good night.
I will.
Good
night, y'all. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.